All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is another Fan Talk Friday. I am joined by a returning guest in Justin Sandu. He's here to talk about his visit to see his beloved Atlanta Falcons face off against the Los Angeles Rams in the playoffs, as well as talk about what he expects to see from his team against the Eagles this weekend.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, Justin, welcome back to the show. Let's kick things off and talk about this, your visit to the Rams game.
All right, sounds good. My visit was a lot of fun. You know, I was on the Falcons sideline, so there are a lot of Falcons fans in the area. It was just a great experience for me to see the Falcons in my first playoff game.
Was that your first Falcons game that you've seen live?
No, I went to the Falcons-Cowboys game in I think it was week 11 or week 10 or something like that. And I also went to the Falcons-Rams game from last season. So it was my third one.
Okay. You know, there's been a lot of talk throughout the year with Rams games where, because they don't really have quite the home field advantage, maybe that explains why they've gone 500 at home and were almost undefeated on the road this year. But I'm curious sort of to ask you if, were there, you know, a healthy amount of Falcon fans? Could you estimate, you know, how much of the crowd was Falcon fans?
Yeah, I would say it was probably about, you know, 5 to 10%. I was like on the section, the side that there were like a decent amount on the Rams sideline. I don't really think there are any pretty much, but I could like, in terms of the noise, like, I think the Falcons fans were close to, like, being able to be heard on TV, but there just weren't quite enough of them, so.
Okay. So, when you watched that game live, you know, what were some of the things that stood out to you in that game?
So, like, firstly, what stood out to me was the field conditions were not very good. I saw lots of guys slipping. Gurley couldn't make any cuts. You know, Matt Ryan almost did the splits, all that sort of stuff. And also, like, from the Rams' offense, I just didn't think Jared Goff was very sharp. He missed a lot of throws low, and he just seemed very jumpy. Even when there wasn't a ton of pressure on him, he just seemed pretty uncomfortable there. From the Falcons' defense, I liked their secondary. They made a lot of great plays, Alford, Trufant, all those guys. And when Goff completed a few balls to them, like, they were perfect throws. The Falcons' defense couldn't do anything about it. And one last thing with Matt Ryan, he seemed to be under duress all day, but he just found a way to keep making plays, scrambling. He made the touchdown pass to Julio when he was falling down. So I think he was one of the main reasons the Falcons won the game.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that, Justin. It was interesting sort of with the last point you made with Matt Ryan facing pressure. I don't think it was the best performance that Matt Ryan had, but I do think some of the variables involved in the game were not making it great, particularly the fact that he was under pressure the entire game. And then when he seemed to get clean pockets, you know, the field was doing its best to mess him up there. So I think he managed to persevere. And so he gets an A+ in terms of the perseverance. But, you know, as always, there's always going to be a couple of plays left on the field, but I think he did an excellent job sort of managing the game and made the throws that he needed to make. And as for the other quarterback, I'm with you. I thought Goff, you know, and that was one of the things I was sort of counting on and talked about on the podcast the previous week in terms of first time starting quarterbacks in the postseason. It's a different beast, and very rarely do guys win their first postseason game unless they're backed up by a great defense. And I don't know if the Rams, even though they're a good defense, I wasn't confident that the Rams defense would be good enough to sort of compensate for that and really keep the game as close as it needed to be to deal with sort of those first playoff jitters. And I thought, you're right, Goff missed a couple of throws, a lot of easy throws. He did make some big time throws a couple of times. I remember that throw he lofted over. It seemed like all his big time throws were when Trufant was in coverage, because that big play he had down the seam to Robert Woods was a great throw. Then he sort of stepped up in the pocket and lobbed a throw to Woods on the sideline that Trufant was like 2 inches away from batting down, and it just made a perfect catch for Woods and whatnot, perfect spot to throw that football. But then he missed like some of those throws to Gurley that Gurley, you know, was credited with dropping. I thought were just bad throws that Gurley had to do too much to adjust to. But then there was a couple of ones that Gurley just straight up dropped. So it was definitely an up and down game for Jared Goff. And fortunately for the Falcons, they didn't have to do a whole lot of heavy lifting. Defense played great. Don't get me wrong there, but didn't necessarily have to deal with maybe the best Rams offense, and that would have probably challenged them a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with you. I also think we need to give a shout out to Deion Jones, because Gurley has had like lots of receiving yards in the past few games. And even though Goff's throws weren't the best, I agree with you on that. But Deion Jones was a big part of limiting Todd Gurley in the receiving game.
Absolutely. I think it was, you know, Jones did a great job. I think it was a team effort. We saw Brian Poole make a couple open field stops. So even if Gurley had caught some of those passes, or Goff had delivered better passes that Gurley would have caught, I think our guys were sort of swarming the ball and would have been able to make those plays to prevent him from making those big gains. But certainly, you know, those two, you know, basically Todd Gurley is the Rams' number one running back and number one receiver. And so the fact that I think we did a good job containing him in both regards.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And one more thing from that game I think we should point out. I think what Dan Quinn did a great job is changing defenses at the last minute. Because there's been a lot of rumors that the Rams like to go quickly so they can get up to the line and have Sean McVay basically call the audible for Jared Goff before the headset shuts off at 15 seconds. So I think Dan Quinn shifting defenses after that was cut off really made Jared Goff have to like do stuff on his own, and I think that led to a lot of the confusion and jumpiness from him.
Oh, that's an interesting observation. I hadn't heard anybody say that yet. And I
heard that. I think I was listening to like First Things First and a few things like that. They talked about it, so I thought that was interesting to hear.
Yeah, that'll be something definitely, you know, after the season, I'll go ahead and try to check that out to see if there was a notable instances like that. I'll probably wind up forgetting about it, but okay, guys, even though the Falcon season is going on strong, if you want to check out what's going on with the offseason, maybe you want to check out Locked On NFL Draft, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema are already breaking down the position groups, the best players, the worst players that are going to be at the Senior Bowl, that they will be personally on hand to visit in less than 2 weeks from now that you're listening to this. So definitely want to subscribe to that podcast, get all their Senior Bowl updates, get their Senior Bowl preview, and stay locked on for this NFL Draft. Before we jump to the Eagles game, we had you on back in early November, right before the Panthers game, right, like maybe the day after Kelvin Benjamin got traded or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a topic of discussion we talked then, but obviously I don't care about that now. But one of the things that we talked about then was we discussed Steve Sarkisian, as we always do on this podcast. He is the number one topic on this podcast on a daily basis. And we talked about sort of the struggles he went through in the first half of the season. And I think you specifically mentioned something along the lines of, because maybe we were talking about maybe his job security or something. And you talked about what, you know, he would monitoring how much improvement, if any, he showed in the second half of the season to determine anything like that. I'm curious to sort of get your thoughts on whether or not you think Sarkisian has, you know, improved to whatever degree that you think in the second half of the season, and whether or not that has sort of changed your opinion about him.
I think he has improved a little bit, but I still don't think he's great. Now, I do think Dan Quinn believes in him and that he will be the offensive coordinator next year. And I think he should be, just to keep the continuity, unless somehow they can get Gary Kubiak to be that. But like last year, it seemed like Matt Ryan, like he looked at whoever he looked at was wide open. Now this year, I know the O-line isn't as good and there are a few other factors, but it seems like Matt Ryan's having to, you know, scramble and try to make plays a little bit more on his own than he was compared to last year.
Yeah, I think that's a fair observation.
So I think he will stay next year. And I think that's good, you know, just to keep the continuity. And like Kyle Shanahan, his first year didn't go great. So maybe the same thing will happen with Sarkisian here.
Yeah. That has been sort of the topic, I guess. You know me, I'm always a little skeptical on these things, but certainly I am expecting improvement next year. I guess the question is going to be how much improvement. And I think, you know, Matt Ryan being a little bit more comfortable with sort of what he's being asked to do in the play calls, I think will certainly help. And I think that's, you know, we saw that with, you know, Shanahan's first year where he just did not look comfortable. But then the excuse was he's learning a brand new offense with completely different terminology than what he had experienced the seven previous years. And he has a bunch of new faces that he doesn't really trust anymore. And, you know, one of his security blankets in Roddy White was just sort of a shell of himself at that point in time. And basically Jacob Tammy had to take the mantle as the number two receiver and Leonard Hankerson when he was healthy in the first half of the season. And that certainly was not ideal. And I think, you know, that's not quite the same excuses we can make now in terms of not having the adequate personnel, but it certainly does seem that he's not fully, he's not playing with the confidence, and thus you're not seeing sort of the timing of the offense basically is a little bit off. And I think that's, you know, sort of the difference where he's not necessarily pulling the trigger. What you said in terms of when Matt Ryan would throw the ball, it seemed like guys were wide open. And I think that's, you know, result of the timing of the offense being, you know, honed to a fine tip and whatnot.
Yeah. And also I think like his lack of confidence this year has to do with some of the interceptions. And I think a lot of that is bad luck because not a lot of them are his fault. I know you like don't think drops are a big deal, but when they lead to interceptions, you know, it kind of stalls the drives. And I think that has led to a lot of the lack of confidence because his receivers have struggled to hang on to the ball and they've led to interceptions a lot of the time.
No, I think that's a fair observation. And, you know, I will backtrack a little bit on that statement to this extent. I don't quite think drops are as big. I think some people have basically implied or outright said that like the big reason why the Falcons offense went from where it was last year to this year has been because of drop passes or something, basically implying that like, and it's like, no, the drop passes are relative to the drop off from last year. And I wrote an article about that today on FalconsFans.com is like a small drop in the pond in terms of, you know, the puddle or the lake or the river or the ocean that, you know, represents that regression. But certainly there's no doubt that the drops have had an impact on the game. I just don't think, I think it's caused people to maybe overreact. And I think for me, I think it's partially the reason why some people think the Falcons need to get new wide receivers. Cause for some reason in the last 6 months, they've decided that these wide receivers aren't good enough. After 6 months ago, many people were saying this is the best wide receiver core in the league. And I think drops, we don't need to start suddenly changing our viewpoints on these receivers just because they've had a few more drops. And I think a lot of that is due to the timing of the offense and guys not necessarily having it down. And so losing things on concentration and whatnot. So I don't think we need to do anything drastic. And so that's why I mean when I say drops are a little bit overrated, because I think people have a tendency to make them out to be, you know, this huge, huge thing when I think they're like, they're a factor, certainly, obviously. But
yeah, that's fair.
So, Justin, I'm curious. You emailed me earlier this week saying that you wanted to be back on the show. And, you know, you indicated that you were at the Rams game. And so I was like, okay, yeah, firsthand experience. I sit here in my computer chair that creaks and opine about the Falcons without getting some of that firsthand experience in the games. And so that's certainly welcome. But the other thing that you mentioned in that email is that you had a slightly different opinion of my expectations on the Eagles game based off of what I said in the rapid reaction. And I'm curious if you've listened to some of the recent episodes in terms of where my opinion lies on the Eagles, but you know, you can answer that by expressing sort of where you disagree with me and what are your thoughts on this upcoming Eagles game.
Like, I agree with you. I think it's a little ridiculous to think that the Falcons would just come into Philadelphia and just win easily. I don't think that's going to happen at all, especially because the Eagles are just a big football team and they might be able to bully the Falcons a little bit. But where I disagree with you, I think the Eagles secondary is a point of weakness and they've been getting beat deep a lot. So I think, you know, if the Falcons, Julio Sanu, maybe even Taylor Gabriel, if they are able to protect Matt Ryan at times, I think the Eagles secondary can be vulnerable off some double moves and stuff like that.
That's fair. Yeah, I know the Giants got them a couple of times on some double moves. The Giants also, knowing that, you know, they have the offensive line that they have, they also relied heavily on a lot of short passes, a lot of quick throws to the slot receivers. Like Sterling Shepard had like 15 targets in that game. I think Evan Engram, the tight end, who's basically a wide receiver, had like 13 targets or something like that. So, and they also threw the ball a bunch to the running backs. I think the Orleans Darkwa and whoever their other running back was, Wayne Gallman, also combined for like 15 targets. So honestly, I think you're right there, Evan. Justin. I was thinking of Evan Engram. I think you're right there, Justin, with saying that I think there will be some opportunities to get some deep shots, and it really sort of depends on, you know, you can sort of set those things up with, if you go start out dinking and dunking and you get those cornerbacks to start sitting on these routes, then you can hit them with those double moves and get some shots down the field. But I do think the Falcons primarily will play it conservative and try to get the ball out of Matt Ryan's hands quickly just because of the quality of the Eagles' interior. You know, Fletcher Cox is obviously Fletcher Cox. Everybody knows who he is. He'll often be lined up against Wes Schweitzer at the right guard position. Not necessarily a favorable matchup for the Falcons. They also like to kick Brandon Graham inside when Jimmy Jernigan's not playing there. And so that's going to be, those are two guys that are going to face Ben Garland quite a bit in this game. And so obviously that's not necessarily a matchup that I expect Ben Garland to do too well either. So I do think the Falcons will do what they did against Carolina and do what they did against the Rams last week, which is a lot of sort of quick passing games. And I do think that does then potentially set up some double moves down the field where we can get some big gains.
Yeah, I think the Eagles' defensive front, they're just so deep and so big. It's going to be a struggle against them all day long. So I think in the run game, you're going to see a lot of tosses to the outside and stuff like that. But yeah. I think it's more important for the attempts and the yards, because I'd be shocked if they have a lot of success on the ground, but it'll be important to try to keep them honest by running the ball, even if it's not the most successful.
Yeah, I'm with you that, you know, 100% on that. You know, we saw in the week 17 game against Carolina where Matt Ryan threw, I think he had 45 pass attempts. And when you count sacks, that was like 47 dropbacks or something like that, which was the most he's had this entire season. I don't want to see Matt Ryan dropping back the pass 45 times. You know, I think they should try to run the ball, even though, like you, I don't expect it to be overly effective. You know, we saw that against the Rams, but the Rams, you know, run defense, you know, despite the other strengths of their defense, isn't quite as good as you would assume. But the Eagles, you know, you can make a case based off of certain metrics that they have the best run defense in the entire NFL. And so I don't expect, with a backup offensive lineman like Ben Garland in the lineup, that's going to really give the Falcons a lot of favorable opportunities to make some plays. But, you know, the good thing about Devontae Freeman is he can create things that aren't, even when stuff isn't quite there. And, of course, Tevin Coleman has the speed that if he can get some space, you know, the couple of times when you do block well for him and do create some lanes for him, you know, he can really do some serious damage. So I think they'll have some opportunities in the run game, so I'm with you on that. They do need to, you know, try to run the football and try to maintain some balance. But it would not shock me if we're held to under, you know, 50 or 60 yards on this game.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And maybe Freeman and Coleman can kind of make up for it in the pass game, because I'm not that familiar with the Eagles linebackers. So I want to get your thoughts. Like, do you think that Freeman and Coleman can have like 100 yards combined receiving? Do you think that's possible?
I think it's possible. I think, you know, it depends on how many targets you get them. But if we're talking like what the Giants did, or even what we did against Carolina, and we're talking double-digit targets for both of those guys combined, I do think there's a possibility that with screens and other types of things that you can get 100 yards potentially out of those two guys. As for the Eagles linebackers, you know, I've been a big fan of Michael Kendricks for a very long time. He's basically been a player that until this past season, I was basically pushing for the Falcons to trade for him, because he's basically, to me, the player that, you know, Devondre Campbell has the potential to be. I don't think Campbell's quite reached that level there, but he's certainly improved his play over the last couple of games. And so that makes me a little bit more – it seems like Campbell always plays his best football after Christmas these last 2 years. So maybe all my complaining, I just need to wait until December in terms of Campbell. But yeah, Kendricks is good. He's very good, very fast, very athletic, very physical, as Dan Quinn might say. Their middle linebacker is Donnell Ellerbe, who you may or may not be familiar with because he's been all over the place, played for Miami, played for the Saints recently. He's been the guy that replaced Jordan Hicks in the middle. Ellerbe is okay, you know.
He's questionable, I think.
Yeah, he certainly was not doing great things when he was playing with New Orleans, and Devontae Freeman and the Falcons were running it down their throats, so I think he's a vulnerability. The other outside linebacker who will play often in nickel is Nigel Bradham. A good player. I remember when he was a free agent a year or two ago, he was a guy that I thought the Falcons should look at as a sort of a cheap starting caliber player. That's basically what he is. He's a solid starter. Not anything to write home about, but, you know, he does his job competently. So I do think, to answer your question, Justin, I do think the Falcons can create some opportunities in the passing game with their running backs. I don't think it's going to be like, they can't cover us in the same way that, you know, like in the Denver game 2 years ago. Like, it's just like we just completely dominate the game in that regard. But I certainly think they'll have some opportunities to make some plays.
Yeah, so that should be interesting to watch.
Yeah. Before we get into this next section, I want to remind you guys to check out Locked On Eagles with hosts Michael Kist and Ben Solak. If you want to see how the other side lives, check out what those two guys are doing at Locked On Eagles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. Any other thoughts on this upcoming game? I know a lot of people have been talking about, you know, Nick Foles, he's terrible. I think, you know, part of me wants to feel confident that the Falcons will be able to, you know, this. My expectation is this will be a close, low-scoring game. I'm curious if you agree with that. But there's a part of me that wants to believe that the Falcons are going to make the defense is going to make Nick Foles look really bad, and he's going to turn the ball over a bunch of times. We're going to be like plus three or four in the turnover margin, and that's going to give the offense a lot more opportunities to score points. And so we might wind up seeing this, you know, 28-7 type of game rather than like the 17-14 or 20-17 type of game that I'm sort of expecting at this point. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very close, low-scoring game, like you said, because I think it's going to be a struggle for the Falcons' offense to score as well. What I think the Eagles are going to try to do, they got a big old line. Their offensive line is a lot bigger than our defensive front. So I think what they should do is just try to pound Blunt and Ajayi up the middle. I think that's their best chance to win, to control the clock and keep the Falcons' offense off the field and the ball out of Nick Foles' hands. Because they have three good tight ends in Zach Ertz, Brent Celek, and Burton. I think that's the other guy's name.
Yeah.
They can, you know, run 13 personnel and just try to pound it. And then maybe you have a couple play action off that with some tight end throwbacks and get a couple big plays that way. I think that's what the Eagles will try to do. So I think the Falcons will load the box to try to defend that and then not really show a lot of respect to Nick Foles and be comfortable with manning up the receivers.
I think that's a pretty good strategy. I think you have, you know, if I was building a game plan, that's probably what I would try to do as well. And we'll see if the Falcons can take care of business. You know, it wasn't that long ago that I would not been confident that the Falcons could stop the Eagles from doing the things they want to do. And I know I talked on a recent episode with somebody, I can't remember who it was, they all blur together, but we talked about sort of the improvements in the defensive side of the ball. And the main sort of indicator of that is that when teams try to do, you know, if teams want to beat you by doing A, B, and C, you know, you can stop them from doing B and C or whatever, as opposed to letting them do A, B, and C and then being at their mercy, you know, depending on how the things. And I think the improvement of the Falcons defense has been in recent games that they've stopped teams from doing the things that they want to do. So I'm reasonably confident that the Falcons should be able to take care of business against that Eagles offense and you know, stop them from quite achieving the goals that you just set for them.
Yeah, I am too. And I think what's interesting to think about last year when the Falcons struggled in Philadelphia, I think a main part of that was because Darren Sproles, I think, had a lot of third down conversions in the passing game. I think it's a lot different this time around because their running backs aren't really pass threats. So I think it makes it easier in the sense they can just focus on loading up on the run and not have to worry about these guys creeping out of the backfield and having a huge day receiving.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I remember before I looked it up, I was like, is Sproles still playing for the Eagles? I had forgotten that he got put on IR earlier this season. And so that was part of the reason I think I was a little bit going into that game on that rapid reaction, a little bit more trepidatious than, I think that's a word, than maybe other people were. Assuming that the Falcons managed to get past the Philadelphia Eagles this week, which is probably not a safe assumption for us to be making, but we're just going to go ahead and do it. We're going to be, you know, there's not a lot of positivity and optimism on this podcast, so we're gonna do that. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on who do you want to see the Falcons face in the NFC Championship game, and who do you think they'll see?
I think they should want to face the Saints, because I just think the Vikings, their defense is so good. When we played them in week 13 or whatever, they only scored 9 points. That was just a struggle. I think the Saints, yeah, they're really good on offense. I think they're better than Minnesota on offense. But Andres Pete just got put on IR, so they might be a little vulnerable on the O-line. And it seems like Kamara and Ingram haven't had any big games recently. And Keanu Neal did a pretty good job on Kamara in week 16. So I think that matchup will favor the Falcons more, because if they play Minnesota, they got Xavier Rhodes to stop Julio. They got a huge defensive front to power through our line. And Case Keenum, I know it's Case Keenum, but he's still got some weapons and he can still make a few plays.
Yeah, I'm definitely more confident that we can, if we do face the Vikings in a rematch, that we'll play better than we did that last time. But I just think the degree of difficulty in beating the Vikings with that defense is just so much harder than it is with the Saints. The Saints obviously are a quote unquote the more balanced team, but I think we've shown that, you know, even though we lost to the Saints in week 16, like, had we, you know, converted, you know, instead of fumbling at the 1 yard line and getting stuffed for a 1 yard gain, you know, that's a very different game. And those two things go a different way, let alone the officiating or whatever other things that went wrong in that game. And I think you're right. Like, the defense has shown that they can keep Kamara and Ingram in check. You know, Michael Thomas is good, but I feel a lot more confident that if we face the Saints again, that we can keep him in check. And you're right, with the Saints offensive line is good and our pass rush hasn't quite cracked that nut just yet, but I feel like they're on the verge of doing that. You know, if they could do that. And I do think, you know, basically the Saints defense is Lattimore and Jordan, and we haven't had a lot of success blocking Cameron Jordan. And certainly Lattimore has had his fair share of big plays against us, but we've also exposed him a little bit at times with Julio as well. So I feel like the Falcons are just better prepared. They know what they're getting into with the Saints. And, you know, I think either game is not going to be an easy win by any means. But I think that they match up better with the Saints, even though, you know, some might argue the Saints are a little bit more of a better all-around team, just because they have both a good offense and a good defense. Well, you know, Minnesota's offense hasn't been bad this year, but you look at them on paper and you're like, well, how are they this good? But we'll see how it goes. But it'll be an interesting potential matchup, regardless of how it goes, assuming the Falcons take care of business on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that I agree with you. I think that Week 16 game was a little misleading because of the turnovers and the getting stopped at the 1 yard line twice. That was the game with the butt interception. That's just a fluky play. And if that hadn't happened, they would have gone into the locker room at 6-0 and with getting the ball. And so it would have just been a completely different game. So I think that game might like taint people's minds about the Saints. But in reality, I do think they're the better matchup. Even though I think they'll be underdogs in both of them, I think they got a better chance against the Saints.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because, like, when you look at the NFC South, like, I personally feel, and I'm sure others will disagree, like, I feel like the Falcons match up very well with the Saints. I feel like the Saints match up very well with the Panthers, and I also think the Panthers match up pretty well with the Falcons. So it's one of those things where it's like a, you know, like a three-way, a triangle or whatever, where each team sort of does a good job against the other team. And so, you know, I think, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people looked at that Panthers game and saw the Saints sort of dominate a good portion of that game and like, oh, the Saints are really good. And I'm like, it doesn't really change the math for me in terms of how the Falcons match up with the Saints. I still feel really comfortable based off of that Thursday night game. And again, if a couple of, you know, fluky sort of things that go a different way in that last matchup, you know, I think the Falcons, people would have a very different opinion of that game, just like you said.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's funny you left the Bucks out because all these three teams just gang up on the Bucks and beat them every time, it seems like.
So. Pretty much, yeah. Bucks, you know, maybe better luck next year, Bucks, you know, with the Dirt Cutter or whatever you guys are planning to do. But certainly 2017 was not your year. Justin, is there anything else that you want to touch on before we let you go?
Yeah, one last thing, like, about the weather in Philadelphia. I just want to get your thoughts. Like, how do you, like, I think it's supposed to not be raining during the game, but, like, I've heard that it might be muddy because it's going to be raining the days up to the game. It's going to be, like, 30 degrees. What do you think about that? Do you think the Falcons will be good in that? Like, or do you think that's going to be a huge disadvantage?
Yeah, let me actually check the weather because I tweeted out about, I saw that it was going to rain on Friday and Saturday, and then, like, within 5 minutes of me tweeting that, weather.com decided they wanted to update the thing and say, like, oh, it's not going to really rain that much.
I think it's been changing a little bit.
Yeah, so I do want to get the, you know, and by the time this episode airs, it'll change again. So I don't even know why I'm checking.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It does look like it's going to rain. It's raining, I guess, apparently it's raining right now in Philly. And it's going to rain for tomorrow, Friday, when people are listening to this. And then it's going to rain early on Saturday morning. So it does sound like the field conditions are not going to be ideal. It's going to be a little wet. I don't, you know, I have no idea what the drainage situation is at Lincoln Financial Field is. So it could be really soggy or it could be nothing. I have no idea. I don't think it's going to mess up the Falcons too much. You know, obviously I think when you don't have, you know, pristine conditions, it does slow down the Falcons, and the Falcons are more of a team built on speed. Well, the Eagles, you can argue, are more of a team built on sort of physicality and power, at least along the line of scrimmage. So I think the field conditions certainly play more to the Eagles' strength than necessarily the Falcons' strength. But, you know, unless it really is sort of a quagmire, I don't expect it to be a huge, huge factor.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you summed it up very well when you said the Eagles are built on size and the Falcons are built on speed. It's size versus speed. I think that's the main theme of the game.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as longtime Falcon fans, I think we know that, you know, that most of the, maybe not most of them, but oftentimes it seems like when the Falcons lose games, it does come against teams that are more built like these Eagles teams, like the Vikings team, that are basically going to challenge the Falcons, you know, and punch them in the mouth and see if they punch back. And historically, the Falcons haven't always been great at doing that. I think, you know, that's been something that Dan Quinn has been trying to change. And I think has, you know, had certainly a moderate degree of success for. And I think this game, and potentially if they face the Vikings in next week, will certainly put that fully to the test, because this Eagles team and that Vikings team are potentially the two most physical teams that they're going to face the rest of the season should they keep on playing. And if they can sort of overcome those challenges, I certainly think that will put to bed and put to rest any sort of notions that this Falcon team is not, you know, not just fast, but also physical, as they say.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
All right, Justin, let the people know. I know you're on Instagram, but is there any other social media accounts that if people want to chat with you in terms of Falcons football, they can get at you?
I still don't have a Twitter, like the only person that doesn't have one, but I am on Instagram at Justin201224.
Okay. If you didn't catch that, it'll be in the show notes on falcfans.com and as well as on the iTunes description, so I'll put that up there. So, Justin, I appreciate it, man. Appreciate you giving me your firsthand account of the Rams game and talking some Falcons-Eagles with me. and then sharing your insights there. And I hope we'll get an opportunity in the off season to chat with you again and get your thoughts on, you know, regardless of how this Falcon season ends, and what are your expectations for the upcoming 2018 season?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Thanks for having me, and go Falcons.
All right, man. You have a good one.
All right, you too.
Okay, guys. Appreciate Justin for coming on, chatting with me, talking Eagles, Falcons, Falcons, Rams. Hopefully we'll be doing this again next week. I don't know. I'm confident that the Falcons will win. I'm optimistic that the Falcons will win, but I'm certainly not to the degree where it's like there's no possibility that I can foresee the Falcons losing. And it's a lot for the reasons that we talked about with the sort of the physicality of the Eagles. And we've seen them basically dominate us physically, you know, 2 years ago or last year, I'm sorry. And just assume anytime the Falcons get their butts kicked, it came in 2015. But no, we legitimately got our butts kicked in 2016. And I think Justin's right that that's what the Eagles' game plan is going to be. They're going to ask Nick Foles to manage the game. And I think he's more than he's, you know, you started, what, 50 some odd games in the NFL or whatever the number is. You certainly should be capable of doing that. So, you know, I think a lot of people focus on Nick Foles, but I don't think he's going to be the key difference. I think Jay Ajayi, I think, you know, Lane Johnson, Jason Kelsey, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Derek Barnett, Michael Kendricks, Ronald Darby, Malcolm Jenkins, et cetera, all those guys are going to make a big difference in this game. And I think it's going to be a close game. And I do think, you know, we could have a situation like it was last week where special teams, you know, it matters. And a big play here or there, a turnover here or there, could be problematic. The Eagles, when I was watching that Giants game, the Eagles blocked a punt in that game. And the Rams got really close to blocking multiple punts. And it feels like the Falcons have been, you know, a hair's breadth away from having multiple punts blocked this season. And certainly that will not help the Keith Armstrong, the pro Keith Armstrong supporters, I guess, in terms of defending his job and his record. But, you know, again, I don't think you can blame Keith Armstrong for the fact that, you know, Derek Coleman's not picking up his blocks, or Teron Ward is not picking up his blocks, or Kamal Ishmael is not picking, you know, that's my stance, but certainly, clearly, other people disagree. So, you know, I didn't say that to jinx it. I don't think the Falcons will give up a block punt, but it's those types of things that could, you know, really swing the outcome of this game. And if the Falcons can't tighten up their special teams, you know, I think last week gave them some optimism, but if they can't do it this week, that could wind up costing them a game. So we'll see how it goes. You know, these playoff games are tough. They're very tough. I think, you know, maybe in the AFC, but I doubt the NFC is going to feature any more blowouts. I think they're going to be all, you know, one score games that go down to the last one or two possessions, both of these games upcoming. And then whoever winds up playing in the AFC Championship, I think, also will be that sort of game. So, all right, I've done enough. Is it post-amble? If preamble is what you say before, is it post-amble? Is that a word? I'm just making up words today. You know, I'm flexing on my vocabulary. I've been using, you know, the word of the day or whatever. I'm probably using half these words wrong. You know, there's many times on this podcast where I'll say it, what sounds like a smart, intelligent word, and I found that word does not mean what you think it does, Aaron. So you just sounded like an idiot on this podcast. So, you know, hey, if I misuse those words, tweet at me. Let me know, at Falc fans. Tell me, Aaron, that word doesn't mean what you think it does. I'm like, okay, I'll stop talking, you know, all highfalutin and stuff. If you don't want to send it to Falc fans, you can also send it to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. If it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it to Locked On Falcons. Otherwise, indicate it in the tweet that you send over to Falc fans. If you're not on Twitter like Justin, or 280 characters does not aptly describe does not accurately describe how poorly my speech is, then you can also void character limits by going the email route. That's lockedonfalcons@mail.com. You can also send a message via Facebook. The Locked On Falcons is the Facebook page. Also post a comment at LockedOnFalcons.com and FalconFans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. And as I plugged it during the at the beginning of the show, I will plug it again at the end of the show. If you happen to be one of those select few hardcore Locked On Falcon fans that always stay tuned to the end of the show just so you can get some entertainment value at how I botch these outros, I'm going to plug it again. I wrote a piece about the regression on FalconFans.com, the offensive regression. Despite the title of it, it is not a negative comment. It's just a breakdown. You know, I'm not good at titles, not good at headlines. You know, the headline gets attention, maybe not in the most positive way, but it is not a negative. It's not a hit piece. It is just basically saying this is how much the Falcons took a step back this year. It's a lot more than what we expected to see, but the defense stepped up and picked up the slack. That's basically in the long nutshell. So I guess now you don't have to read, but give me the click. Right? FalconFans.com needs all the clicks it can get. And also, by the time you're listening to this, hopefully, within either it's live or within a few hours of you listening to this episode, you can also check out the Leftover Mailbag on LockedOnFalcons.com, where all the questions that I did not answer on yesterday's show, that is Thursday's show, and the All-22 review / Q&A, I will answer on the Friday or possibly Saturday, depending on, I don't know, because I haven't finished it by the time I'm recording this. I probably won't finish it until well after I finish recording this. You can check that out. Sorry. you can check that out on Locked On Falcons, the Leftover Mailbag. There you go, guys. All right. So you have been, are you not entertained, as they may say in ancient Rome? Stay locked on, rise up, in brotherhood. You know all the hashtags. That's how we'll wrap it up. I will see you again on Sunday for a rapid reaction. And I'm hoping to get a guest for a Monday show. But if not, then we'll just do the same old Tuesday recap with a guest. And so after that, we'll do an All-22 review, certainly, with another Q&A. But after that, I don't know. So we'll find out on Sunday, right? If we've got another week of, preview, reviews type of episodes that we do on this podcast. Again, hashtag locked on, hashtag rise up, hashtag in brotherhood.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.